Isle of Man Film, UK Film Council and Entertainment Film Distributors present.
Settle down, everybody. Quiet, please. Mobile phones off. Thank you very much.
A school hall.
OK.
About 30 young teens.
So what is it that makes us what we are? What is it that defines us?
One boy hits another.
Is it where we live? Is it our schooling? Or is it our family?
A middle-aged man addresses them.
Alex Ryder, family.
A blonde boy stares at a book.
Alex.
He slowly looks up.
Yes, sir.
Have you prepared something for us?
Alex opens his book.
Yes. Come on, then.
About 14, Alex is tall and good-looking, his tousled blonde hair falling around his slender, handsome face. Wearing a beige, short-sleeved shirt, he gets up and walks to a lectern.
There's not much I can say about my family. I didn't know my parents. They died when I was small. I live with my uncle.
A man on a trail bike.
He's never around, so I can't tell you much about him either. I have a sort of housekeeper because he's always away on business. She's an American and her name is Jack. She's always there for me, which is great because he isn't. My uncle, he's never going to set the world on fire because he's got a real boring job.
The man throws a lit stick of explosive behind him and roars out of a warehouse on the red trail bike.
His work means a lot to him, but he never talks about it.
The man powers down a road, winding across a moor, four other bikers dressed in black on his tail.
So where's your uncle now?
He mentioned something about a conference in Cornwall. Life in the slow lane.
The man on the red bike speeds round a corner, coming very close to an oncoming car. He then overtakes other cars, his pursuers closing in on him. One of the black bikers catches up with him and nudges his back wheel. Then two black bikers get either side of the red bike and steer into it. The man remains on the bike, driving off the road and flying through the air, landing on a beach. A black speedboat surges out from behind a seawall, men with machine guns standing in it. The men fire at the man on the red bike as he careers through the surf, three black bikers just behind him. Further up the beach, a couple of old people watch a Punch and Judy show. One of the men in the boat fires a mortar launcher. A black biker's blown up. A mortar obliterates Punch and Judy. The man on the red bike races up a road. At a corner, the bike slips over, and the man's thrown under an upturned boat, which falls on top of him. The two remaining black bikers open fire on the boat.
I wish I knew a bit more about my uncle, but he's not a very easy man to pin down.
As the two bikers lift the boat to check underneath, a silver BMW Z4 zooms out of a fisherman's shack and races out of the harbour area. Now the man drives the BMW along a moorland road, his red biker's helmet next to him.
And that's about it. The end.
Oh, thank you, Alex.
As students leave school, Alex rides his bike up to a girl with long brown hair.
Hey, Sabina.
Alex.
I was wondering, do you want to do something this weekend?
I can't. I have riding lessons and I'm going up to my parents.
It doesn't matter.
Maybe next weekend?
Whatever.
Alex answers his phone.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, you coming home? Yeah, I'm on my way now.
In the BMW.
How was the conference?
It was fine. You know how they are.
No, I don't. You never tell me.
Well, there isn't much to tell. Wait a minute.
He presses a button, firing a missile.
Hello.
The missile explodes into two bikers following him.
What was that?
Nothing. Alex, look, I'm really sorry about last week. I know I said I'd be there, but this trip just came out of
nowhere.
As always. Yeah. Look, I'll be back in time for
dinner, whatever it is that Jack's cooked up, and then we've got the whole weekend.
Really?
Oh, come on,
when did I ever let you down?
Do you really want me to answer that?
Yeah, I know. Look, I'll see you soon, okay?
I'm glad you called.
Yeah, me too. I'll see you later, Alex.
Bye.
Bye.
Alex's uncle turns up the car stereo. Alex's uncle, who's in his 30s with short cropped brown hair, stares intently at the road ahead. A black helicopter looms up behind the car. Alex's uncle is unaware of it. The chopper's above the silver car. An upside-down head with red hair appears at the car's side window. Alex's uncle whips round. The man hanging from the chopper aims two handguns. He fires both guns. The window bursts into glittering fragments. In silver lettering on a black screen, the word Stormbreaker. An aerial view of London flying over the Thames Barrier and up the river towards the Millennium Dome and Canary Wharf. In white lettering, Sarah Bolger, Robbie Coltrane, Stephen Fry, Damian Lewis, Ewan McGregor, Bill Nighy, Sophie Okonedo. Heading up the river, Tower Bridge and St Paul's, then the London Eye, Parliament and Battersea Power Station. In white lettering, Alex Pettifer, Missy Pyle, Andy Serkis, Alicia Silverstone, Ashley Walters and Mickey Rourke. Additional martial arts sequences, Donnie Yen. Casting director, Sarah Bird. Costume designer, John Bloomfield. Hair and makeup designer, Kirsten Chalmers. A view over the Royal Chelsea Hospital. On a pitch behind the building, people play cricket in the sunshine. Alex rides his bike past them. Music composed by Alan Parker. Editor, Andrew McRitchie. Alex crosses a road and rides up a driveway towards some tall townhouses. Screenplay by Anthony Horowitz, based on his novel. Produced by Mark Samuelson, Peter Samuelson. Produced by Steve Christian, Andreas Grosch. Directed by Jeffrey Sachs. Alex stops by a blue front door and goes in. He throws his keys into a silver bowl. Elsewhere, a Japanese sword is drawn. Alex paces anxiously down the wooden floored hallway.
Jack?
He looks cautiously into rooms leading off the hallway. The short sword is lifted high. Alex continues slowly down the corridor. A woman in a black and white striped headband examines the sword blade. She lifts the sword high again and brings it down.
Jack.
A blonde woman's in the kitchen.
Gakko?
Good day at school? Alex replies, why are we speaking Japanese? We're having a special dinner, sushi. Later, Jack puts a plate of sushi between her and Alex. At its centre, a black, spiky fish.
Arigato. Let's begin.
They bow. Jack stabs raw fish with chopsticks.
I met the most amazing guy at the fish market today. You know what the problem this country is, though? Every good-looking guy is either gay or married. Except for you, but you're too young.
Alex stares at the food.
Will you please eat something? He's coming. He's just stuck in traffic.
He'd have rung. He's probably gone to the office to put in a report, and the next thing we know, he's on his way to Hong Kong. Let me down again.
This work means a lot to him.
Yeah, it means a lot.
All the more for us.
What did I tell you? Who's a genius?
Alex smiles as he leaps up and goes to the hallway. But his smile fades as pulses of blue light shining through the windows at the end of the hall flash across his face. He opens the door. A police car is outside. Two policemen step into the house. Day. Alex, dressed in a black suit and tie, is standing in his uncle's home office, staring down at one of a bank of computer screens on the desk. An illuminated map of the world is on one wall. Jack comes in. Alex looks up and she walks over to him, putting a comforting hand on his back.
Come on.
He blinks back tears as Jack leads him away from the screen, showing a picture of him and his uncle in climbing gear. In a cemetery, Alex stares down at his uncle's coffin.
We are gathered here today to bid farewell to a man called before his time. A reminder that even in the midst of life, we are all of us walking together in the shadow of death. Ian Ryder was a good man. Everyone who worked with him will remember him for his courage and his loyalty. He was, above all, a true patriot.
A patriot.
We have entrusted our brother to God's mercy, and we now commit his body to the ground.
Confused, Alex looks around him. noticing that the cemetery is crawling with armed, suited men wearing earpieces.
Ian Ryder, a true patriot.
Across the gravesite, a grim-faced man in a grey mask stares at Alex. A CCTV camera homes in on Alex. Ian Ryder's coffin is lowered into the ground. Jack turns to watch Alex, who stares glumly at the coffin.
To him, be glory forever. Amen.
A grey-haired, bespectacled man watches Alex as the priest makes the sign of the cross. The service over, people walk away from the graveside. Alex is with Jack. The man in the grey mac walks up to them.
I'm John Crawford, from the Royal and General Bank. I just want you to know you have our condolences. It's a tragedy. Car crash. If only he'd been wearing a seatbelt.
Thank you.
This is Alan Blunt. He's the chairman of the bank.
Alex, sorry about your uncle. We're going to miss him. He talked a lot about you.
That's strange, because he never mentioned you.
The grey-haired man raises an eyebrow.
This is my deputy.
A glum woman.
Mrs. Jones.
I'll be in contact very soon, Alex.
Why?
Well, after what's happened, there's a question of who's going to look after you.
I'll look after him.
We're just trying to help.
John Crawford regards Alex grimly.
I'm sure we'll meet again, Alex. Hopefully somewhere a little less gloomy.
He turns.
My uncle always wore a seatbelt, Mr. Blunt.
Alan Blunt looks back at Alex.
He was a very careful man.
Not careful enough.
Soil is scattered onto the coffin.
Do you mean what you said about looking after me?
Of course I did, idiot. I know I'd never leave you.
Yeah.
Besides, who else is there?
I mean, will you be allowed to? We're not even related.
I've been living with you for 9 years. How much more related do you want to be? Is it just me or are those bankers weird?
Jack!
They spot a van in their driveway.
Hey! That's Ian's stuff!
Harry!
What the heck are you doing?
The van drives off. Alex has gone.
Alex?
On his bike.
Alex!
Alex cycles madly out of the driveway, across the road and into the park, narrowly missing Jack. The white van, emblazoned with a sign reading Jeff Slater Auto Wreckers, heads across the Albert Bridge. Alex is in hot pursuit, cycling the wrong way between two lines of traffic. A yellow car slams its brakes on to avoid Alex, who darts in front of it and onto the pavement before shooting back out into the traffic. Now he cycles down a grass bank and onto a roundabout, landing in front of cars. After a narrow miss with a black taxi, he pedals hard towards a railway bridge, the white van still in his sights. The van turns a corner. Alex takes a shortcut, flying off the top of some steps and landing in front of more cars. He races through a car wash beneath a railway arch. On the other side, he spots the van nearing the end of the row of railway arches. A Jaguar pulls out in front of him. Alex lifts up on the bike and flies over the front of the car before shooting through a car repair centre. He flies after the van as it heads into a dusty breaker's yard. Alex skids to a breathless halt. The van disappears from his view. The gate shut behind him. Getting off his bike, Alex keeps low and creeps past a security hut. The man inside is engrossed in his newspaper. A huge iron claw drops down onto a red car and picks it up. Alex conceals his bike under a blue tarpaulin and runs towards the van.
You see that guy? You tell him I want him, right?
The van driver and his mate go into a shed as the red car's dropped into the crusher nearby. As Alex reaches the van, he spots a silver BMW Z4 parked next to the crusher. Its license plate, R1D3R. The red car begins to crumple as the enormous metal teeth of the crusher close around it. Alex starts over to the BMW, its driver's door riddled with bullet holes.
Oi! What's going on?
Alex ducks.
The rider car should have been done 2 days ago, so do it now, all right? I didn't get the paperwork. Just do it, Harry. I'll go to Liverpool Street.
Liverpool Street? What, the station?
Yes, you Bert. Where else? I'm going to take him the stuff.
Right!
Thick-set Harry signals at the crusher operator. Alex swings round to see an Alsatian bounding towards him. Max dives into the car. The dog tries to get in through the shattered window. Obediently, the dog scampers off. The iron claw slams down on the car's roof, sharp metal prongs shearing through the windscreen. Alex cowers in the passenger seat as the car is lifted into the air and then desperately tries to open the door. It won't budge. The car's dropped into the crusher, showering Alex with glass. Alex kicks frantically at the door as the metal jaws of the crusher begin to close around the car. From the middle of the dashboard, a screen flips out showing an image of the car and the flashing word emergency together with some option buttons. Amazed, Alex prods the escape options button. The seat is displayed on the screen. As the car's metalwork starts to buckle around him, Alex pushes a button marked eject. He's fired high into the air and grabs hold of the giant iron claw. Looking down, he shuts his eyes and lets go, dropping onto the crusher. Alex dashes down a narrow alley between two rows of wrecked cars. Coming out into an open area, he stops, faced by two burly guys. Other men gather behind him. He makes a dash towards a pile of cars. Alex runs over car roofs, then dives inside one, crawling through it and emerging to roll across the roof of another, before somersaulting and landing neatly on the ground. He runs straight at a man and jumps at him, wrapping his legs around the man's back and bringing him down. Another guy lashes out with a rope, but Alex leaps out of the way. He picks up a length of rope and swings the heavy knotted end at the men around him. Then he swirls the rope deftly in the air before putting his right leg out to wrap the rope around his foot. With a swift kick, the rope flies off his foot, straight into one man's face. Spinning around, his eyes on fire, Alex continues with quick flicks of the rope, getting the men off balance one by one and bringing the rope end down on them. Closing in on a group of them tangled in rope, Alex delivers a couple of swift punches and then yanks the rope hard, pulling all the men together. They fall into a heap. Alex jumps over them and scampers towards his bike. A man fires a gun. The security guard bursts out of his shed, tripping the gunman up. Alex flees. Now Alex stands with Jack on the upper level of Liverpool Street Station.
Sure they said they were coming here? I mean, they could have gone anywhere.
No, they didn't say they were taking the train. They said they were bringing stuff to the station.
Where?
I don't know.
Below him, Alex spots grey-macked John Crawford.
Jack.
What?
Over there.
It's that guy from the funeral. It's, What's his name? Alex?
Alex has gone. He sprints along the upper level towards the stairs and then charges down them. He jumps the banister. A pair of eyes on a huge video billboard seem to follow Alex as he hurries after John. A CCTV camera picks out Alex. A man in blue tinted glasses watches Alex on a monitor screen. Alex walks on through the concourse, the video billboard far above the crowds emblazoned with the word Stormbreaker. John, black-haired, white and grim-faced, walks towards some steps leading down to a subway, Alex not far behind. John then steps into a photo booth at the top of the stairs and draws the curtain. Alex is a little taken aback as he watches flashes of light coming from inside the booth. The booth curtain is pulled back. A smartly dressed black woman steps out and strides past a puzzled Alex. Gingerly, Alex approaches the photo booth and looks inside. Its brightly lit interior is empty. With an anxious glance around, Alex steps into the booth, sits down on the stool, and pulls the blue curtain across. He stares ahead, his black shirt open, revealing a white t-shirt underneath. Digging in his trouser pocket, he pulls out a pound coin, which he inserts into the slot. He recoils at the flash. The stool shoots sideways and Alex finds himself in a tunnel.
Welcome to the Rhinos. Please remain seated and await docking procedure.
The stool and Alex glide off along a track, coming to a stop by sliding doors which open, revealing a high-ceilinged lobby with a queue of people.
morning.
Alex doesn't respond to the man, who goes to sit on the stool. The woman from the funeral approaches.
Good morning, Alex. Shouldn't you be at school?
I was at Liverpool Street Station. And now I'm here.
That's right.
They get into a lift. Jack runs up to the photo booth.
Morning.
The man gets out. The lift descends.
So what is this place? Hogwarts?
I think you've probably realised, Alex, your uncle didn't work for a bank. The Royal and General doesn't exist. He works for us.
Who are you?
My name is Mrs. Jones. I run the Special Operations Division of MI6.
Wait a minute, you're saying he lied to me?
He lied to everyone. Sorry. Shop level. Part of his job.
Alex follows Mrs. Jones through a map room.
Ian Ryder was one of our best agents.
Until you got him killed.
He got himself killed. It's an occupational hazard, I'm afraid.
Well, if you're a banker.
Mr. Blunt wants to talk to you. We have a proposition we'd like to make.
They enter a glass-walled office. Grey-haired Mr. Blunt stares at a picture of London on a large screen. He raises an eyebrow and turns to face Alex.
We want you to work for us.
Alex widens his eyes in disbelief.
You're not being serious.
Actually, it's not my habit to make jokes.
Oh, you're making one now. I don't want to be a spy, in case you haven't noticed I'm still at school.
I'll take that as a no, then. What a great shame. Your uncle would be very disappointed.
What?
Letting him down like that, but then, I suppose, young people.
How can you say that? He wouldn't want me to be here. He spent his whole life making sure I never knew anything about this.
Really? Then how do you explain?
He presses a button on a remote.
This.
The screen shows footage of Alex's fight in the wrecker's yard.
First-rate martial arts moves.
Perfectly executed.
Who trained you?
Nobody trained me.
You're a first grade Dan, Alex, a black belt of karate.
Who paid for the lessons?
It was my choice.
No.
A picture of Alex and Ian.
All your life, Ian Ryder was preparing you. You speak French, German, and Japanese.
He took me on holiday.
You've been scuba diving, mountain climbing, abseiling.
They were my hobbies.
White water rafting, rifle shooting, martial arts.
Alex looks down.
He was training you.
That's not how it was. You're trying to spoil everything. Please put me back in the photo booth and show me the way out.
They're in the lift.
I'm surprised, really. I'd have thought you'd want to get back at the people who killed your uncle.
Alex stares at the floor.
How's that, housekeeper of yours, by the way? What's her name? Jack Starbright. I suppose she'd have started packing by now.
Why? What do you mean?
Didn't she tell you? Her visa ran out 7 years ago. She'll be deported any day now. Actually, we might prosecute her first. Make an example. Working here illegally may mean a prison sentence.
What are you? What kind of people are you?
Ones that normally get their way.
Liverpool Street concourse now ready for departure.
Alex looks at the waiting photo booth stool and then turns to Mr. Blunt. Special Forces training camp, Brecon Beacons, Wales. Alex, in full camouflage gear, bumps along in the back of an army Land Rover as it drives through the training camp. The vehicle stops by a wooden shed, and Alex leaps out, watching in dismay as two teams of men carrying tree trunks on their shoulders jog past him. Alex follows the soldier into the shed.
Gentlemen, this is our latest recruit. He's here for 2 weeks training.
Sarge.
Don't ask me about it because I don't know a thing. I just do as I'm told. We have no names here. We have no ranks. This is K-Unit. Fox, Bear, Eagle and Wolf. You'll be Cub. Get him a bed.
The four soldiers, two white, two black, circle round Alex, sneering.
What the heck is this?
Jeez, it's a kid.
Who the heck do you think you are? A schoolboy? They gotta be joking. Well, what's your name? Who sent you here?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell me. If you could tell me, it must be with Special Operations. They're the only ones stupid enough to come up with something like this.
I said.
Wolf's grabbed him, but Alex delivers a couple of well-placed kicks.
I can't tell you.
That's very good. Someone's been teaching you self-defense. Ain't gonna help you, eh?
Wolf, a small black man, glares at Alex.
You ain't gonna last 2 days.
Day one, start of framing. Alex and the others, wearing full combat dress, crawl through mud under a mesh of barbed wire. Day four sees the soldiers, all carrying assault rifles, stumble exhaustedly down a rocky riverbed. Day seven, Alex slips as he crosses a rope bridge. He hauls himself up and shakily crosses to the other side. Day nine, Alex is on a zipline. One of the others pushes him off. Just as Alex glides across a lake far below, another soldier yanks on his safety line, bringing him to a stop.
Oh, look at him! Come on, Cap! You're not in the playground now, Cub! Move in! Come on, hurry up!
Alex slips his hands from the harness and drops into the lake, flailing his arms as he surfaces in the green water, gasping for air, camouflage paint smeared all over his face. Day 12, night combat exercise. The five members of K-Unit creep through tall grass and then press themselves to the ground. Suddenly, floodlights are switched on, illuminating the soldiers.
Well, well, well. What have we got here?
The door of an old cottage is bolted from the outside. K-Unit are inside.
We're finished! We've blown the whole exercise! We'll get kicked out!
To Wolf.
This is your fault. You had the map.
Wolf turns away from the others, spotting Alex thumping on metal sheeting covering a wall. Alex kicks a sheet. And it falls.
There's a fireplace. How did you know? I saw the chimney on the way in.
The kid's right. It's clear.
Sure. You think they'd just leave it open if they thought we could all climb up?
You can't. You're too big. But I can.
Go on, Cub. Up you go.
Alex crawls into the fireplace. A little later, blackened with soot, he emerges from the top of the chimney into the sunshine. Behind him on a hill are an assortment of army vehicles. He climbs carefully down onto the top of the roof, but freezes as he hears voices below him.
All right, mate, watch out. Cup of tea.
Oh, yeah, tough. We should take that lot back to base.
Nah, later will be fine. See ya. Fancy a nice cup of tea, boys?
You want to watch
it? Shut up, sit down.
The soldier on guard sips his tea. Alex moves but dislodges a stone. It plops into the guard's tea. The guard stares at his drink. Then sips it again. Breathing a sigh of relief, Alex turns and crawls back to the chimney, peering over it to watch the activities of the small group of soldiers in the camp on the hill. They're all inside a mobile office. Seizing his chance, Alex slides off the roof and runs to the mobile office.
I don't know, you look like a schoolboy. You can only be about 14.
14? It's a bit young for special forces, isn't it?
I know. Getting back to his mummy. Yeah, probably needs a nappy change by now.
Alex locks the door and lifts up the brake. The office starts to roll.
Boss, yeah? Can we move?
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Oh, no!
Alex runs after the office, waving at the soldiers inside. It hurtles past the cottage. The guard pursues it. Alex unbolts the cottage door. The office drops off a cliff into a lake. A major's with Mr. Blunt.
Cuts, bruises, fractured limbs. It's a miracle no one was killed.
Well, I'm very sorry, Major. We will be talking to a man. Boy.
He's no child, Mr. Blunt. He's a lethal weapon.
He storms out. Mr. Blunt turns to Mrs. Jones.
He's ready.
Mr. Blunt shoves a biscuit into his mouth. At the training camp, Alex comes out of K-Unit's barracks, his kit bag over his shoulder. Wolf notices him as Alex starts to climb into the back of a waiting Land Rover.
Oi!
Alex stops.
Heard you were leaving.
Alex walks towards Wolf.
Yeah, that's right.
What you did earlier. Or if it weren't for you.
Wolf pulls off his beige beret and unclips its brass badge.
Yeah.
He throws it to Alex, who catches it and inspects it carefully before smiling at Wolf with a thankful nod. Alex steps towards the soldier, holding out his hand. Wolf shakes it firmly as the other members of the unit look on. The BBC News runs a segment on Stormbreaker.
And finally, an amazing gift made to the British nation. The Stormbreaker has been called the most sophisticated personal computer of the 21st century. And 1 month ago, its multi-billionaire inventor, Darius Sale, made his astonishing announcement.
That's right, Viv. I'm going to give a Stormbreaker to every school in the country.
He's bearded.
And while I'm at it, I wouldn't mind giving you one, too.
Really, Mr. Sale?
Alex is with Blunt.
We don't trust him.
Why not?
Well, we don't trust anyone. It's sort of what we do.
We always thought that Darius Sale was too good to be true.
So, 6 months ago, we put in an agent to keep an eye on him.
You're talking about my uncle?
Yes. Sale has a manufacturing plant in Cornwall. It's built on top of what used to be a tin mine. Ian Ryder went there as a security guard. He sent us these images of the old mine entrance just outside Sale's complex.
In his last message to us, he mentioned a virus.
A computer virus?
He was on his way to tell us. But he never arrived.
Something's going on. We need to get someone in there to take a look around, and this may be our last chance.
Why me? I'll show you.
The cover of a magazine.
This is Kevin Blake. He's a computer nerd. 6 weeks ago, he won a competition in a computer magazine, Disk Drive World. Do you ever read it?
No.
The first prize was a visit to Cornwall and a chance to try out the Stormbreaker. He's due to arrive tomorrow.
It's a PR stunt. I imagine Mr. Sale is trying to show the world what a nice man he is. Get a kiddie in to look at the works. Now you will take his place.
Yeah, but I look nothing like him.
A new cover with Alex on the front.
We've spoken to the editor.
Alex's eyes widen.
There's just one problem.
Blunt glares.
Well, I know nothing about computers and I'm not a computer nerd.
But you soon will be.
A pile of books.
There's only 2 days left. There's a launch at the Science Museum. This Friday, 70,000 Stormbreaker computers going live.
Just take a look around. But be careful of Sale. He may seem charming.
But he's about as charming as a snake.
Just keep your eyes open and report back.
How am I meant to do that?
We will give you a telecommunications device. That and other gadgets.
Like a gadget.
Blunt furrows his brow. Alex crosses Regent Street and heads into Hamley's toy shop. He glides up an escalator, bubbles wafting from the ceiling. A blue-shirted assistant snatches a toy back from the brat.
Yes, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Alex walks up to the assistant.
Oh, you're so mean! Ah, and I suppose you want one as well, do you?
No. I'm looking for something to take to Cornwall.
The assistant considers.
Cornwall?
Alex nods.
Follow me.
They head into a back room, passing someone dressed as a chicken.
I keep my special toys down here, where children aren't allowed. Rather pleases me to say.
A metal yo-yo.
Right, we'll start with this.
A yo-yo? Bit of a grandpa's toy, don't you think?
Oh, really? And your grandpa's yo-yo had a miniaturised engine with traction of up to 90 pounds. All in a magnetised housing with a specially developed cord of super nylon, did it?
No.
Batteries included?
No.
No, I think not. Now, here's something for you to keep it in.
A rucksack.
Right. What about this?
Don't pull that! Well, you'll deploy the parachute.
A parachute?
A parachute.
Wow.
Oh, this is all appropriate for you, I think.
A tube of cream.
Zikrin.
Put some on your finger. Perfectly harmless, pleasantly fragranced. Woody musk with top notes of citrus, but applied to anything metallic and...
Alex squeezes cream onto a metal model emergency vehicle. The metal fizzes.
It'll work its way through up to 6 inches of carbonised steel. Yes, now this is called a fountain pen. Not something you have much use for, I'm sure. However, the nib can be fired from a range of up to 8 metres. The ink is sodium pentothal. Whomever you hit will do exactly what you want for up to 6 hours.
6 hours?
6 hours. I've saved the best till last. Over here.
Alex picks up the mallet of a xylophone.
Don't do that!
Why, is it dangerous?
No, it's very annoying.
A handheld video game and some game cartridges.
a Nintendo DS game system, but it's been specially modified. And what it does depends on the cartridges you insert. Put in this one here, and it's a PDA, scanner and transmitter. It's how you keep in touch with us, assuming you can be bothered. This one here turns it into a bug finder and sonic intensifier. It means you can hear conversations through solid walls for up to 250 yards. This one turns the whole device into a smoke bomb. Has a 5-second delay.
That's really cool. And what about Mario Kart?
Mario Kart is a game. We thought you might like it for the flight.
A propeller plane lands at a small airport. In the baggage hall, a tall woman is waiting. Her bleach blonde hair is done up at the back, and she has deeply arched black eyebrows. She wears a long black leather overcoat. Mrs. Jones and Alex approach her.
Miss Vaughan, I'm the editor of Disk Drive World.
Then this must be Kevin.
That's me.
You should say goodbye now.
Well, goodbye, Kevin. I hope you find your stay most informative.
I'm sure it will be.
Mrs. Jones looks worried. Alex sits in the back of a Hummer SUV, Miss Vole driving the large vehicle through a small fishing village.
I am Nadia Vole. I work for Mr. Sale, Press and Public Relations.
A PR.
She hoots at pedestrians.
It is a very important job. This is Port Talon. It is a fishing village.
Nice place.
Not if you're a fish.
They pass a fisherman packing salmon in ice. Now they drive along a desolate, winding coast road. Looking out of the window, Alex spots some ruined buildings, like those of the old tin mine that Mr. Blunt showed him. Alex digs out his Nokia communicator. He smiles as he reads a message. Heard you were ill. Wish you better. Sabina. Kiss. Miss Vole watches him suspiciously in the rearview mirror. They turn into a complex, passing huge warehouse buildings with walls slanted at odd angles and roofs like they're made of huge pieces of broken eggshells. Miss Vole drives the Hummer down a concrete roadway. High wire fences on either side, patrolled by men in black uniforms with dogs. A barrier rises, and they drive further into the complex, passing a sign reading Sale Enterprises. A black helicopter flies overhead. Alex stands in a vast semicircular office, towering arch windows along one wall. He peers into a display case at a harpoon gun, then wanders past ornate gold furniture, down a couple of steps, and onto an indoor island platform surrounded by a water channel. In front of the platform stands an enormous fish tank containing a colossal jellyfish, its tentacles waving in the brightly lit blue water. Gigantic doors open behind him. Mr. Sale strides in wearing sunglasses and with a cane in his right hand.
Hey, how are you?
He takes off his glasses.
That's pretty cool, don't you think?
I'm not sure I'd want one as a pet.
Salia. That's the Portuguese man of war. I got that beauty in the South China Sea. You know, I'm happy killing exotic animals, but not this one. This one I had to keep. She sort of reminds me of myself.
99% water, no brains, no anus.
Sale looks into Alex's eyes.
You know, I think I'm going to get to like you. You know why I love her? I love her because she's an outsider. She's silent. She's deadly. And if you came into contact with that, you die a very memorable death.
I'm too young to die.
You're never too young to die.
Sale chews on a cocktail stick.
Excuse me. Mr. Sale, you have the American ambassador on the line.
Miss Vole hands him a phone.
Mr. Ambassador, well, how are you doing?
A fish is stung.
The answer's still no.
The fish disintegrates.
I'm telling myself. I'll do it right now. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to join you for lunch, but I'm looking forward to seeing you at dinner time. It's been quite a while since I've been face-to-face with a British schoolboy. You know, I can't wait to hear what you think about the Stormbreaker.
I'm looking forward to it, Mr. Sell.
An old man with scars on his cheeks.
This is Mr. Grin.
Seems he's cut himself shaving.
Mr. Grin used to be a novelty act in the circus. Yeah? Used to catch a spinning knife in his teeth.
And?
He lost his concentration when his mother waved to him in the audience. Take care of my boy. I'll see you later.
Mr. Grin grunts and nods for Alex to follow. In a huge bedroom, Alex sticks a cartridge into his Nintendo. A word on the screen reads, Exocet. The points of a compass appear with a blinking red dot in the northeastern section, showing the position of a bugging device. Alex turns and walks towards a stuffed boar's head hanging on the wall. He flicks the boar's nose. In a security room, Miss Vole clutches her headphones in pain. She marches into Alex's room.
Are you settled in, Kevin?
He unpacks.
Yes, thank you.
It is time for you to see the Stormbreaker.
A panel slides upwards, allowing Miss Vole and Alex access into a large, dark, dome-shaped hall.
You are the first child to experience the power, the world domination of the Stormbreaker. This model has been already loaded with highly developed programs for all aspects of the school curricula. Please.
Does it have pinball?
There is no pinballs. Please, be still while it scans you.
He stands in an eye-shaped frame.
Scanning commencing.
The frame slowly turns.
Please stand still.
I see you're using a Slice Matrix virtual reality software.
Yeah. Who taught you about computers, Kevin?
My uncle.
He is a computer whiz king?
No, he was a security guard. But he died.
And how did that happen?
I'm not sure. But I'll find out.
Maybe. But not today.
Alex forces a smile.
Scanning complete.
Please put on the glasses. Choose a subject and press enter to begin. I will return later. Enjoy!
Alex puts on virtual reality glasses.
Place your hands on the pads.
There's a button underneath each finger and thumb instead of a keyboard.
Use your fingers to navigate. Select category. You have selected space. Press thumb key to begin.
Alex presses down with his left thumb and instantly finds himself floating in virtual reality outer space. He grins with delight.
There is no gravity in outer space. The large Magellanic Cloud...
A satellite zooms towards Alex. He tries hitting buttons to escape.
Illegal interface.
But nothing happens.
Illegal interface.
It comes straight at him. Jack lays a rose on Ian's grave. Mrs. Jones watches her. They walk together.
Where is he now?
Can't tell you. Sorry.
Are you sorry? What are you sorry about, sweetie? Taking him out of school or trying to turn him into what... some kind of spy? Alex isn't a spy. He's a 14-year-old kid, lady.
Well, that's what makes him useful to us.
And what happens if he gets hurt? What if he's killed? Could you live with that, Mrs. Jones? I worked for Ian Ryder 9 years. 9 years, I didn't know about any of this. But I am warning you, if anything happens to
Alex... It won't. We'll take care of him, I promise. By the way, he, wanted me to give you this. It's your visa... It's permanent.
She strides away. Alex pushes through a virtual reality jungle. Coming to a cliff, he looks down onto a river valley. A herd of triceratops grazes on the banks.
Dinosaur. The name means terrible lizard. 160 million years ago,
wow. These
huge creatures first roamed the face of the earth.
He whistles.
The largest carnivorous dinosaur was the Tyrannosaurus rex. Each one of its teeth was 15 centimeters long.
A vast Tyrannosaurus turns to roar into Alex's face. Terrified, he tears off the virtual reality glasses and climbs down from the eye-shaped frame. Later, he's on a rooftop walkway. He stops by a door looking across the tops of huge ventilation units to an airfield. Alex goes inside, and walking underneath gigantic fans, comes to a door onto an exposed stairwell descending to the bottom of the vast warehouse, where Mr. Sales meeting scientists.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sales. We've been expecting you. And we've prepared a demonstration for your improvement.
Is it ready for me?
Oh, yes, sir. This way, please.
As Mr. Sale goes out of Alex's view, Alex starts to head down the stairs, but suddenly spots someone coming up. He turns and bolts up onto a metal walkway, crouching low as he hurries along it.
Kevin?
In the Stormbreaker hall.
Kevin?
Alex pulls on thick blue gloves. Miss Vole strides out of the hall, her stick-like arms waving from side to side. Alex leaps onto a vertical girder, grabbing the edges and sliding down it. Sale walks into a room chewing a cocktail stick.
This is a scale model of the rooftop at your London HQ.
Sale inspects a structure like a round ridged radiator. Far above, Alex walks gingerly across a support beam and then jumps down onto another walkway.
I've incorporated a powerful nationwide transmitter that will give you manual override. In other words, a backup system.
This backup system,
it will send out a signal that will instantly activate all 70,000 computers. Of course, it shouldn't be needed. Is it all right, sir?
It's excellent.
Sale looks up at the walkway. Alex steps back out of sight.
It's very good.
Alex pulls open a metal mesh door next to a sign reading Restricted Zone. He walks quickly down the gloomy corridor, a fan turning above him, throwing stripes of brilliant light across the grey walls. Alex walks down a stone-walled stairway and stops outside a door with a keypad next to it. He glances behind him, spotting the shadows of approaching armed guards, and darts into an alcove opposite the door. The guards approach the door. Alex watches as one taps in a passcode, but the other then blocks his view. As the door opens, Alex spots people in yellow safety suits. The door slides shut. Alex steps out of the alcove.
What are you doing down here, Kevin?
Oh, I was just wondering where this went, Miss Vaughn. What is that place?
This area is restricted. This way, please.
She points to the stairs.
Okay.
Sale, his copper hair falling around his shoulders, sits at a huge table in his office opposite Alex. Mr. Grin pours Sale's wine.
You know, I was brought up on the wrong side of the tracks in a very dark place. It was terrible. It was very nasty. I still have the nightmares.
What happened?
I was lucky. I got out. My mother, she won $1 million on the state lottery. She had me educated in the best schooling system in the world, right here in your country.
You were at school with the Prime Minister?
That's right. And he treated me with the same kindness as all the others in my class.
Alex nods unsurely. In Alex's room, Miss Vol searches through his things on the sofa, which stands between two upright elephant tusks. Finding Alex's Nokia communicator, she picks up the device, smiles and stalks out of the room across a tiger skin rug. Now she's with a scientist in a lab. They both look at a computer screen which reads, "Scanning SIM card," and then shows a map.
This is the number, Miss Vol, and this phone is registered to an address in Chelsea.
She squeezes past him for a better look at the red dot flashing on the map.
So tell me, do you like the Stormbreaker?
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool? Come on, man, is that all you can say? All right, well, it strikes me that you don't talk very much. I mean, I know you're the strong, silent type. You don't even seem like a computer enthusiast. And you don't look like one either.
Mr. Grin eyes Alex coolly.
That's funny, Mr. Sell.
Alex leans forward.
Because I think I'd say the same about you.
Okay. You got a point, son. Listen, I very much enjoyed meeting you. And I'm sure you'll have a lot to talk about when you get back to school. When we launch the Stormbreakers tomorrow, I'll be thinking particularly of you. Enjoy the grub.
Night. A helicopter flies above the Thames. Jack's painting a ball-shaped spiny fugu fish, which is also being talked about on TV.
Do not let the spines puncture your skin. The fish can result in vomiting, fever, or even death. Though a great delicacy in Japanese restaurants, the fugu fish is one.
Jack pauses the TV and opens the door.
Excuse me. I am looking for a person called Jack.
She goes in.
It's about Alex.
You are a friend of Alex?
Sorta. I look after him.
A photo.
This is Alex.
So? And this man with him? His father?
What is going on? Tell me, who is this boy? What is he doing?
Who are you?
Who is he working for?
Wait!
Miss Vol points a pistol and widens her eyes. Jack widens hers and then grabs a large long-necked ornamental bird sculpture and lashes out with it. Miss Vol expertly blocks all Jack's moves with her arms and legs, kicking, chopping and flailing, and leaving the sculpture without a neck. Pushing Jack into the kitchen, Miss Vol strikes a pose and swirls her hands above her head. Jack tries to do the same but resorts to throwing pots. Miss Vol lashes out with the ladle, knocking the food mixer onto the remote control, causing continuous changing of TV channels. Jack chucks the fugu fish at Miss Vol, but the fish is deflected by a colander and lands on the floor. Miss Vold charges with the ladle like a lance. Jack dodges and the ladle smashes through the glass of the microwave. Jack clouts her with the fridge door. On TV, Jerry the cat's head erupts with a huge bump. Miss Vold punches Jack, who lands on the floor. On TV, a woman floors another. Jack's thrown across the room. She gets up and steps on the fugu fish. As she hops around on one leg, Miss Vold pushes her and she smashes through the coffee table. Miss Vold goes to leap on her, but Jack puts her foot up and Miss Vold impales her hand on the fugu fish. She sprints out. On TV, the news ends.
Good night.
Alex is asleep. His room is in a tall stone tower. The beam of searchlight passes across the tower. An ornate gold-decorated clock chimes. Alex's eyes spring open. He pulls back the duvet and leaps out of bed, fully dressed. He stops to watch the searchlight beam swing across the room, illuminating a leopard's head hanging on the wall as it does so. Alex then goes to the big wooden door, locks it, and then fetches the yo-yo. The back of the yo-yo turns into a clamp which he fixes to the window, before lowering himself out, attached to the super nylon line. The clamp fastens tighter on the window frame, and Alex starts to walk headfirst down the dark building. Lights are on in the room below him. Someone shuts the curtains. He carries on. Nearing the ground, he stops suddenly. Dog handlers walk just underneath him. Two SUVs drive side by side through the complex of buildings, an open-backed lorry following them. The back of the lorry carries six large metal tanks, each one marked R5 in big black lettering. Crouched behind some oil drums, Alex watches the convoy pass and pull up, and then runs over to some taller drums to get a better view of some unloading bays. Two guards hold back straining Dobermans on their leashes. Alex starts back behind the drums as light from the headlights of two passing quad bikes shines in his face. A tall, red-haired man in dark clothing wanders past the activity, looking around with a superior air. A Hummer pulls up and Sale gets out. Alex watches as he greets the tall man.
Ah, Mr. Gogorovich, I'm glad you could join us. I didn't know you were going to come in person.
This is the last batch. My people wanted to be assured that the operation had all gone according to plan.
Oh, your people. It's my plan. It's my operation. Why would your people think anything could go wrong?
An R5 tank falls from a forklift.
You stupid idiot!
Gregorovich runs over to check the tank. He looks up, relieved.
It's okay. The container is not compromised.
Sorry. I won't do that again.
The forklift driver.
No. You won't.
He shoots him. Alex winces in horror.
My people don't like mistakes.
Well, I ain't got all night. Let's go to work, boys.
Back to work! All of you!
Men heave the tank back onto the forklift. Gregorovich paces. Mr. Blunt and Mrs. Jones are in the back of a chauffeur-driven car.
This just came from Alex Ryder.
Yasin Gregorovich.
Has to be.
I thought he was still in North Korea.
Obviously not. This is the proof you need. The Stormbreaker launches in less than 24 hours. Cancel it.
Yes, you're right. For once. I'll put a call into Downing Street.
Get Alex out.
There's no need. He'll be on a plane at 12 o'clock tomorrow. You can meet him if you like. Take him for an ice cream. Well, he's done very well. He deserves a treat.
She glares.
Helps Ryder.
I suspected him from the moment he arrived. And his uncle was Ian Ryder, the security guard that was actually a spy.
Alex listens with the Nintendo.
I want you to go to his room. I want you to wake him up. Gently. Then I want you to kill him.
Shocked, Alex shuts the Nintendo. Outside, armed guards check the back of a truck as it prepares to leave the complex. Satisfied the back shutter is closed, the barrier's raised and the truck goes on its way. As the truck trundles down a narrow, winding moorland road, a flock of black-faced sheep block the way, and the truck is forced to stop. Alex climbs out from the undercarriage with his rucksack. Alex jogs up a heather-covered slope and stops to survey the ruined tin mine in front of him. An almost windowless stone building with a tall chimney and no roof, and two crumbling stone walls left of another building. Alex climbs carefully down a metal ladder in a dark, damp shaft. Reaching the bottom, he finds himself in a tunnel. He looks to his right, shining a torch down the passage hewn out of stone. He turns round and faces a small bridge leading to a pile of debris, including some old bits of wood. He steps gingerly across the bridge and bends to examine the wood, shining his torch down at it. He looks up. He ducks as a bat flies past him and flaps off down the tunnel. Moving past the debris, Alex crouches by a prop shaft, shining his torch into a narrow little tunnel.
You gotta be kidding.
He takes off his rucksack. Putting the rucksack down in front of him, Alex lies on his stomach and pushes himself into the tunnel, shining his torch around the dank, rough stone walls. He punches out a wooden plank blocking his way, and claws, pushes and squeezes himself out of the tiny passage, sliding headfirst down a pile of rubble into a tall chamber. A ventilation fan slowly turns at the far end. Alex picks himself up. Alex walks over to a mesh grate and drops to his knees, looking through it down into a cavernous laboratory area. Standing, he uses his torch to crack off the bolts fastening the mesh. He kicks a further grating away and climbs out onto a walkway above the laboratory. Alex peers around a concrete pillar. Below him, people in yellow safety suits and breathing masks are working at a long conveyor belt running through the centre of the lab. Alex creeps along to another pillar, shielding himself from view. Alex again peeps out to watch a gigantic injecting device above the conveyor belt. It's loaded with cylinders of green liquid. A needle descends from the device, inserting itself into a black box on the belt. Grigorovich observes. Alex swings round to come face to face with a guard pointing an assault rifle at him. Two guards now haul Alex across the floor of the lab towards Grigorovich, who's standing at the top of a flight of white steps. Alex looks up at him with an awkward sigh.
What are you doing here?
Alex stares at him.
Who are you?
I'm Kevin Blake. I was invited here.
It's a good act. You do it very well. But you should not have come here.
We can talk.
I don't think so.
Grigorovich wanders down the steps. Alex spins round, leaps onto the conveyor belt and grabs one of the cylinders of green liquid from the injecting device.
Yes, we can.
Grigorovich points a finger.
Don't drop that.
Alex inspects the cylinder.
R5. What is that?
Put it back.
Alex turns to the injecting device and starts to insert the metal-ended cylinder into its place amongst the other cylinders, but then jumps down from the conveyor belt, the cylinder still in his hand. Grigorovich takes a step back, eyeing him nervously. Alex holds up the cylinder.
The way out. Now.
Alex's face tightens with resolve. Grigorovich reaches out to take the cylinder, but Alex snatches it away. Grigorovich scowls and then points to the far end of the lab. Alex walks backwards towards a sliding door, the cylinder in his hand. Armed guards follow him at a distance. The door slides open as a worker comes through. Alex throws the cylinder high into the air as he turns and pelts through the door. Grigorovich dashes forwards and catches the cylinder. Guards fire at the door, but Alex gets through it unscathed. Rucksack on his back, Alex sprints down the grey corridor under the turning fan. A red alarm light flashes. Alex hurtles up a metal staircase straight into a guard. He spins round, charges down a high-level walkway, and jumps across pipework onto another walkway. One guard's about to leap over the pipes towards Alex, who stops and opens a valve. Steam shoots into the guard. Meeting another guard, Alex deftly throws him over the railings. Another pursuing guard knocks himself out on a pillar. Alex vaults over some machinery. He pulls out his Nintendo, presses a couple of buttons and drops it before dashing off. The guards running past the Nintendo are enveloped in a cloud of choking smoke. Alex leaps up, grabs a pipe and swings himself at more guards running towards him. They fall like dominoes. Alex tears up another staircase and out through a grey door, running underneath a series of gigantic ventilation fans.
Going somewhere? Kevin?
Alex stops, turns and looks up to see Miss Vole. Armed guards pour down some steps and form a circle around him. Alex meekly raises his hands. Miss Vole beams, her lips thick with dark red lipstick. Now in sales office, Alex is tied to a chair with a thin red pole as a back. Mr. Grin throws a knife which embeds itself into the pole just above Alex's head.
And if this is how you treat the winner, I'd hate to see what happened to the runner-up.
You're not Kevin Blake. You're Alex Ryder. Your uncle was pretending to be a security man. Yasin Grigorovich dealt with him.
That's right. And MI6 sent you to take his place. Shame on those people sending a 14-year-old boy to do their dirty work. I'm a very British, I'd have said, not very cricket, huh?
What are you doing here? Why are you putting a virus into the Stormbreaker?
Sale sits on his desk, swinging his legs.
It's not a computer virus.
Alex thinks back to the injection device.
It's the real thing.
It's called R5. It's been genetically modified.
Why are you doing this?
Do you know what it's like to be a foreigner in this country? You know, for me, but son, that was slow death. It wasn't pretty. I was mocked. I was derided from the day I arrived here. Especially at school. The kids, they weren't very nice. Kids can be cruel. Ah, man, they called me Trailer Boy.
He gets off the desk.
Do I look like a trailer boy to you? Huh? Darius Smell? That's what they called me. You know why?
Because you didn't wash?
Grin aims.
Okay. That's because they were snobs. And you know what? I hated all of them. They made my life miserable. And it was one kid in particular. And do you know who this kid grew up to be? The Prime Minister. That's who. But hey, look, I'm used to it. My whole life I've been treated that way.
Alex snorts.
This is what it's all about. Revenge?
Well, hey, revenge can be good. Because in a few hours at the Science Museum, my old friend, the Prime Minister, he's going to press a button. And you know what's going to happen?
Mr. Grin smiles broadly.
That button's going to connect all the Stormbreakers on my wireless network. And at the same moment, it's going to release a virus straight into the classes packed with British school children.
You're going to kill thousands of innocent people.
No, no, of course not. I'm going to kill billions.
You're not being serious.
Sale paces, a cigar in his hand.
So you were bullied. Lots of people are bullied. But it doesn't change them into raging psychopaths.
A knife lands between his legs.
You should be careful how you talk to me.
Alex looks up at Grin.
Good shot.
Actually, it was a near miss. Listen, Alex, I'd love to hang out here and shoot the breeze with you, but I've got a rather important appointment in London, so I'm going to leave you to Nadia. I'll see you guys when it's over. Cheerio, old boy.
Sale walks out. Standing in front of the huge jellyfish tank, Mr. Grin and Miss Vole clasp hands and step towards Alex. In MI6...
They won't listen to us.
What?
You know the government view on intelligence. At the moment, they'd sooner trust a Ouija board. The bottom line is they're ignoring my advice and going ahead with the ceremony.
What about security?
I'm throwing a net around the Science Museum, but it may be beside the point.
What about Alex? He wasn't on the 12 o'clock plane.
Well, let's hope he can look after himself.
Alex is thrown into the jellyfish tank. He looks up at the huge tentacles draping down just next to him. Horrified, Alex frantically swims away from the gelatinous creature to the surface. Miss Ball stands watching with a look of smug expectation.
Get me out! The jellyfish cannot attack you, Alex. It has assisted. No brains. But you will tire soon. You will drift into its embrace. And then...
Alex holds his breath as he sinks back down into the water. Miss Ball takes a photo.
A souvenir for Mr. Sale.
Mr. Grin, wearing a long black tailcoat, hobbles through an aircraft hangar towards a large helicopter. He sits down in the pilot's seat. Alex thrashes around in the water as Miss Vole takes more photos.
Say cheese.
Alex surfaces again and gulps down air before submerging and desperately trying to keep himself away from the thick tentacles looming above him. Making sure he's well away from the jellyfish, Alex pulls the tube of zit cream from his pocket and surfaces again to take off the cap. Alex dives down through the blue water to the bottom of the tank and begins to squeeze the cream onto part of the metal frame of the tank.
What are you doing? The mud is skinned!
Alex surfaces. He grabs the metal mesh above the tank. Nothing seems to be happening. Alex looks down in despair. Suddenly, the glass shatters and a tide of water and jellyfish sweeps over Miss Vole, knocking her to the ground and carrying her across the room. Alex releases his grip on the mesh, drops down into the tank and steps out. He looks at Miss Vole, her body covered in a gelatinous mass, her legs kicking in the air and her fingers still on the camera button taking photos. Grabbing the harpoon and his rucksack, he runs out. Now he's on a quad bike speeding out of the warehouse. He guns the bike towards the airstrip. Guards in three Land Rovers speed after him. As Alex takes a corner to get onto the runway, the quad bike tips onto two wheels. The helicopter taxis along the runway, Mr. Grin unaware of Alex speeding towards him. Alex swerves from side to side as the guards open fire. The helicopter trundles along the runway heading towards Alex and slowly lifts into the air. Alex stares at the chopper, his eyes fixed in grim determination as he powers towards it. Mr. Grin looks ahead and finally notices the approaching vehicles. Alex suddenly pulls on the brake, causing the quad bike to spin round. He leaps off and shelters behind it to shield himself from the guard's gunfire. Alex grabs the harpoon and aims at the chopper as it flies over him. The harpoon punctures the undercarriage of the helicopter, and Alex is lifted into the air on the long harpoon wire. Watching in amazement, the driver of one Land Rover crashes straight into the quad bike. Alex is carried away, dangling underneath the chopper. Grigorovich watches, impressed. High above farmland, Alex claws his way up through a hatch in the floor of the helicopter, a tight squeeze with his rucksack on. Mr. Grin sings to himself. Mr. Grin flicks a switch. Alex appears behind him. Near Hyde Park, two police motorcyclists lead a convoy of black vehicles past a riding school. In the helicopter, Alex takes the cap off his fountain pen. Holding the pen up, he takes aim at Mr. Grin and fires. The nib sticks into Grin's neck. His eyes widen and glaze over.
Mr. Grin?
Alex steps towards him.
Mr. Grin? All right, Mr. Grin. I want you to fly me to London as fast as you can.
Grin banks the chopper steeply. The convoy arrives outside the Science Museum.
It's Red Button Day. In just a few minutes, the Prime Minister will press the button which will activate the Stormbreaker computers in schools nationwide. Darius Sale has insisted that the Prime Minister be the one to press the button. In fact, he's made it button fingerprint sensitive, so nobody else can take his place. Let's cross live now to the Science Museum.
The BBC News.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Stormbreaker will be launched in 5 minutes.
In the museum, Jack runs up to Mr. Blunt and Mrs. Jones as they walk towards a crowd.
Where's Alex?
We don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You promised me you'd look after him.
We don't have time for this now, Miss
Starr. You don't have time. Where's Alex?
A suited man hauls Jack away as the fat Prime Minister comes in.
Ladies and gentlemen, Darius Sale.
Sale, wearing dark glasses and his hair in a ponytail, comes in from the other end of the vast display hall and makes his way towards a small stage on which there's a lectern and a silver podium with a red button on it. Sale and the Prime Minister step up onto the stage and shake hands. The Prime Minister eyes Sale coldly and then turns to the crowd with a grin, posing for the press photographers. Above London, Alex slides open the side door of the helicopter.
The message is clear. Education, education, and...
He looks at his notes.
Education. Which is why I am delighted to accept the most generous offer from one of our foremost entrepreneurs and indeed an old school colleague of mine, Darius Smell. Sale. Darius Sale.
The Prime Minister holds out his arm to indicate Sale, who steps up to the lectern, chewing on a toothpick. Alex looks down at buildings far below him and, shaking his head in fearful uncertainty, jumps from the helicopter. In the museum.
Oh, I'm just so glad to be here with my dear friend, the Prime Minister. And I'm going to tell you, the Prime Minister is the one who must take credit for what's about to happen here.
Alex skydives.
My Stormbreakers are about to transform the lives of every child in this country. And let me tell you, this is a day that none of you will ever forget. And now I shall ask my old friend, press this button, it'll send a signal that will activate the Stormbreakers across this entire nation.
20 seconds to Stormbreaker launch. Stand by all schools.
Here we go.
Alex opens his rucksack parachute.
10, 9.
Children in schools across the country watch the proceedings on TV.
6.
Alex hurtles towards a frosted glass roof. The Prime Minister lowers a finger towards the red button.
3, 2, 1.
The Prime Minister jumps back as Alex crashes through the ceiling, his parachute getting stuck and leaving him dangling by a plane.
A red alert. Secure the area.
No, wait!
Hold your fire, he's with us!
Blunt barks orders at armed men. As Alex rides around, the parachute rips, lowering him closer to the ground, where Special Forces men aim guns at him. The lead soldier stares up at Alex in disbelief.
Keep calm. He's unarmed.
Cub?
Wolf?
Oi, he's with us.
Come on, press it.
Give me the gun.
Hey, man, press the button.
Now!
Wolf throws Alex his gun.
Get down, now! Don't panic, everything's under control!
Blunt drops to the ground as Alex opens fire, peppering the stage with bullets. The red button bounces out of its socket on a spring. The Prime Minister turns to Sale.
Darius!
You twerp!
Sale punches him.
Get out of my way!
And hurries out. The dazed Prime Minister straightens his tie. Alex shrugs and smiles at Jack. Later, Blunt and Jones approach Jack and Alex, who's still holding the rifle.
How could you let him slip away?
You do realise, Alex, you nearly shot the Prime Minister.
Congratulations are in order.
Yes, he's done very well, but it's time to go.
What about Sale?
You can leave him to us.
Right.
Alex hands Blunt the rifle and walks off. In a car...
I can't believe I ever let you get mixed up in all this.
When it's over, I'm taking you home.
Where's he going?
To some remote and faraway land where no one will ever find him. Like Paraguay. Iowa. I suppose you got the phone number of that hunky soldier.
Jack.
Do those people have phone numbers?
Jack!
What?
That's it. That's their tower. I saw a model of the rooftop in Cornwall. He was talking about a backup, something to do with a manual override. He's going to set off the virus himself.
Alex has seen a tall, salt cellar-shaped building in the city.
Come on, come on, come on! The traffic in the city!
We're not going to make it.
Come on.
As they sit in the traffic next to Hyde Park, the riding school passes in front of them.
Sabina?
On horseback.
Alex?
Sabina!
Alex!
Hi, can you put me through to Mrs. Jones? I don't know what her first name is. I'm not sending her a birthday card. It's an emergency.
Jack ducks as Sabina's grey horse jumps her mini.
Hello?
Sabina gallops through Hyde Park with Jack holding on tightly behind her. Ahead, the household cavalry are doing exercises with some mounted policemen.
Keep going!
Sabina urges her horse on straight through the household cavalry's formation, scattering them everywhere. The household cavalry charge after Sabina and Alex.
Don't look back! Trust me!
The cavalrymen, red manes fluttering from the spikes of their shining silver helmets, close in on them. Alex looks around to see Jack powering through the park in her red mini. After Sabina rides out through a gap in some railings, Jack swings her mini into the gap, so blocking the route of the cavalry. Sabina and Alex gallop out of the park at Hyde Park Corner straight across the traffic. Together they ride on through Wellington Arch. Mr. Blunt and Mrs. Jones sit in the back of a chauffeur-driven car as it speeds along a road accompanied by police. Alex and Sabina weave through the heavy traffic along Piccadilly and canter across Piccadilly Circus. Jack hurtles round a corner in her mini, but finds the road blocked by a burst water main. A policeman indicates a diversion. Ignoring him, she puts her foot to the floor. The car shoots into the air and through the water, fountaining out of the road. Sale gets out of a black cab and heads towards a towering salt cellar-shaped building with a round ridge structure at its summit. He goes in, passing a burly guard.
If anyone comes in, kill them.
The guard nods. Sabina and Alex ride past the Royal Exchange. A speed camera flashes them. Sale strides across the floor of a vast office towards a keyboard attached to a large metal and glass pod-shaped machine attached to the wall. He keys in a password. Outside, Alex dismounts and sprints into the building, meeting the guard who takes off his black peaked hat and strikes a martial arts pose. Alex bows, the guard bows, Alex kicks him between the legs.
Schoolboy trick.
The guard thuds to the floor. Sale paces by the machine. Sabina runs into the building just as the guard gets up.
Stop!
Sorry!
Sabina kicks him between the legs and carries on her way. Alex dashes up some narrow concrete stairs towards the roof, passing a danger of death sign. At ground level, Mr. Blunt and Mrs. Jones's chauffeur-driven Rolls-Royce pulls up along with a squadron of police vehicles and Jack. Armed police take up positions around the building. Jack runs up to Mr. Blunt.
They're in there!
He's on the roof!
Don't you dare hurt them!
Mr. Blunt barks orders.
Take up positions! Get up there!
Special Forces men hurry up an outside staircase. Sale stares at a small screen above his keyboard.
Loading complete.
He presses a word on the screen reading Activate. The screen reads Initializing. On the roof, a red light in the center of the Stormbreaker logo starts to blink. The screen reads System Error.
Power failure. Satellite link interrupted.
Alex has pulled out a cord.
Put it down, boy.
He stands and turns to face Sale.
I said, put it down.
As Sale approaches, Alex dashes up some stairs, pulling more of the power cable out of its protective box. Sale pulls out a pistol. Armed men take up positions on nearby rooftops. Alex reaches the top of the stairs, which leads straight out onto a ledge. Sale walks slowly up the stairs.
Stay away!
Alex steps back towards the edge. Below, Jack stares up in horror.
Do you have an eyeball?
A gunman looks through his telescopic sight.
Target acquired. We can sight them.
Now, fire at my command.
No, you'll hurt Alex!
This isn't only about Alex.
Prepare for fire!
No, wait! Mrs. Jones, I really don't think this is the time for an argument.
Alan, there is no argument.
Blunt looks indignant, then hands his walkie-talkie to her.
Stand down.
Stand down.
On the roof.
Back off!
Sale lashes out with his cane. Alex loses his footing and falls, saving himself by hanging onto the cable, more of which is pulled out of its casing as he falls. With Alex hanging on for dear life, Sale takes aim at him. But Sabina grabs him from behind. His shot goes wild. A dead pigeon lands next to Blunt. Sale catches hold of Sabina and throws her off the building. Alex reaches out his hand, which Sabina catches hold of.
Hang on!
You know what got me? What really got me? They send a boy. Well, I don't want to rock your boat, Sonny, but the party's over. Adios.
Prepare to fire!
A black helicopter flies between Sale and the armed men, blocking their lines of fire. Alex looks up in confusion as the chopper starts to hover just above Sale. Sale stares at the helicopter, then looks down at Alex again, waving his pistol with a smile. Grigorovich leaps out of the chopper and, hanging upside down, aims two handguns. He fires both at Sale. Alex looks down at Sabina, struggling to keep hold of her. Still wearing a smile, Sale falls onto his side and rolls off the building. Jack and Mr. Blunt look away in disgust.
Sabina! I'm going to swing you onto the balcony!
Alex, don't! The cable will break!
I can do it!
Alex swings on the cable and throws Sabina towards the building. She grabs the railings of a balcony. More of the cable comes unhooked from its mountings, leaving Alex swinging helplessly. He tries to pull himself up, but the cable starts to spark and fray. Sabina spots the upside-down form of Grigorovich being lowered towards Alex. Alex stares up at him, and then down at the ground below. Grigorovich reaches out his hand.
Need a hand?
As the cable frays further, Alex grabs hold of the man's hands. Those on the ground watch as Alex is whisked away underneath the chopper. Later, Alex and Grigorovich climb out of the chopper onto a helipad which is on top of a tall building. They face one another in the setting sun, the dome of St. Paul's behind them.
Why?
Sailhead's become an embarrassment to the people I work for.
What about me?
I had no instructions concerning you.
Grigorovich saunters back to the chopper.
This doesn't change anything. You killed my uncle, you're still my enemy.
I have a lot of enemies.
This isn't over.
Yes, Alex. It is.
Alex looks away from him. Grigorovich steps closer again.
Go back to school.
Alex blinks back tears.
You don't belong to the same world as me. You should forget about me.
Face hardening, Alex turns to him.
I'll never forget you.
Grigorovich shrugs.
That's your choice.
He eyes Alex and then wanders back to the helicopter, climbing into the seat beside the pilot. Alex looks away and stares into the distance, a gentle breeze playing with his straggly blonde hair. The rotor blades start to turn. Grigorovich looks out to see Alex staring at him again. The helicopter lifts into the air. Grigorovich gazes down at Alex, who watches as the chopper drifts away, carrying Grigorovich across the rooftops of London towards the powder blue sky beyond. Alex is left alone on the rooftop, standing in the centre of the helipad, the late afternoon sun shining down on him. Sometime later, Alex and Sabina walk through the busy playground of Brooklyn School.
You know they made me sign the Official Secrets Act. I'm not allowed to tell anyone what happened.
Me too.
Are you really a spy?
No.
That's not what they told me.
No, I'm not a spy, and it won't happen again.
No?
No. I'm just me.
She takes his arm with a giggle and they walk on. Alex turns and looks up behind him at a man on a rooftop keeping a careful watch on him through a telescope mounted on a tripod. Alex smiles.